We have sensor nodes out in the field that are supposed to self-organize into a network, gather data, send it to the gateway or hub. We've talked a lot about what's needed to do that: analog electronics, analog to digital conversion, radio communication, networking. Something has to control all that activity, and that's where computation comes in. Wireless sensor nodes are a form of embedded computing systems, and in particular, they are networked embedded computing systems. So we need to understand what an embedded computing system is. Well, they're different than your desktop system, and that's primarily because they are designed specifically to be coupled with and interact with the physical world. So while your desktop computer does things at its own time, the embedded computing system often has to respond to an event in the physical world, and that could be communication with another node in what amounts to what we call real time. And this is an important distinction that changes how these systems are designed. And there are a couple aspects of this that come into play. Within each node, we have to do some signal processing, and we can use the word intelligent signal processing if we'd like. But the key here is that we are gathering data and we need to do something with it. And we'll talk about this more in a little bit later on in this module. But the data that we gather is noisy and error-prone and otherwise difficult to deal with because it's coming from all these sensor nodes in different places, and it all needs to be processed into something that's meaningful. The second thing that I'll mention is a buzzword in the industry called autonomic networks. And these are networks that basically are also known as self-star networks. And this means not only can it self-organize, but it can do a number of things. And we can think of them as roughly three things. One is self-configuration. Another one is self-healing. One is self-optimization. This would be optimization of performance. And another would be self-protection. How does the network protect itself from failures, from various sorts of attacks? Maybe they are jamming attacks, maybe they're physical attacks. All these come into play. And these relate very much to how you would design the computing system, and it's an active area of research right now. Now we're at the final step. We have a wireless sensor network. It is deployed in the field. It's working, and it is gathering data about the environment. What do we do with the data? And it turns out that engineering has a big role in this as well. And the key point is that we need to go from data to something we can call knowledge or understanding. And the big question is, how do we do that? So the first step is we need some way to manage the data. The data is streaming in from all these sensors nodes in different locations, and we're taking data periodically. And keep in mind that we also may be talking about an internetwork of sensor networks, where maybe we're ingesting data for a number of networks, dozens or hundreds of networks, and we're trying to put all that data together. So the data management involves networking. This is classical internet stuff, web programming, and data archival, storage and archival. We need to archive the data and protect it. The next point I want to make is that once we have the data in hand and protected and available, we need to go back to this idea of going from data to knowledge via what we can call understanding. Obviously, we're taking data to learn something. And if you go back to our introductory module, Module 1, we talked about how for environmental monitoring, the idea of wireless sensor networks is really to enable a new way of doing research to help us understand what's happening in environments and ecosystems. So the next thing that we would think about would be visualization and analysis. And of course, we have a lot of tools available to deal with that. And it's important to think about what are the characteristics of the data that we have to deal with. And I've mentioned this before, but it's worth saying again. Yeah, the data tends to be noisy and error prone. And this comes from transducer noise or measurement noise. And then also, wireless communication is inherently unreliable. And so we will have errors due to communication. Our data is noisy, but perhaps more importantly, remember that we have data streams, if you will, from all these sensors. So we have what we can think of as a vector time series. And you can also think of it as spatio-temporal data, because we are getting data as a function of time at a number of different locations. So these are fairly complex data sets. And so that leads to opportunities in visualization and computer graphics. It really helps to visualize this data, and we need tools to do that. Now, once we do that, we want to continue on the road toward knowledge. And in order to do that, we bring to bear the tools of signal processing and statistics. And in fact, much of this comes from what we call statistical signal processing. Signal processing that takes into account the fact that there is randomness inherent in the data, not only due to measurement noise and to channel errors, but due to the fact that a priori we have less than 100% reliability or confidence in what we know the data will look like. So when we think about modeling, we would actually build in our uncertainty in terms of understanding what the data is like. And this helps us build models. And one of the other things I want to point out is something that's coming very, very important in this area, and that's what we can call scientific workflows. And we can think of them as a type of mashup. And maybe some of you have heard of web mashups. They're ways that you can gather data all over the web, aggregated into some kind of information that's useful to people. So we can think of a mashup as a type of merging of data sets. And these data sets may involve a number of different inputs beyond what we get from the sensor network. One would be remote sensing. And we talked about remote sensing as a way to get continental or regional scale data and how it can be complementary to the in situ data from the wireless sensor network. We also have various forms of archival data. It might even be field notebooks from experiments from many decades ago that help us understand long-term trends. And that's where this mashup comes in, because we come up with tools that allow us to aggregate and integrate these various data sets to ultimately start building predictive models of the sensed environment. And as I mentioned before, there are several areas, some grand challenge questions about biodiversity, invasive species, the effects of climate change. And so this here is where we are trying to get from just piles of data to improving our knowledge of the environment. Resources are always limited, and perhaps the most fundamental limitation in today's world are financial resources. So this implies that we have to deal with budgets. We need to understand how far our money can go in terms of designing and building and deploying sensor networks for particular experiments. So I want to talk a little bit about financial design, or the financial aspects of design, and how it relates to this idea of engineering of complex systems, or the idea of a big theme of this class is systems thinking. When we think about designing systems, we may not be consciously doing this, but we often are struggling with how do we do this in a cost-effective way? Can we find some subsystem or component or part that will do the job for less money? So again, we have this idea of budgets, and I want to talk a little bit now about what goes into a budget. The first thing we want to think about is what we call NRE and RE. Non-recurring expenses and recurring expenses. Basically, incur these expenses or costs in different stages of the design cycle. So non-recurring expenses occur a lot in the R&D phase. You're doing research, trying to understand a new transducer. You're doing development, building new printed circuit boards, or designing software. This all goes into the product or the technology before you actually manufacture it in quantity. And then the manufacturing stage is where you hit the recurring expenses. And these are things such as the parts and materials and assembly cost for actually building the sensor network. So part of that that comes into play is the bill of materials. A lot of engineering when you're building is to come up with a bill of materials, sometimes called a BOM, so you understand everything that goes into a device, or in this case a sensor node. Every single part, how many are needed, what is their cost. So that's key part of the recurring expenses. The second thing is the cost of manufacturing. How much does it cost to get an entire sensor node built? This includes everything. Not only the printed circuit boards, the population of the boards with chips, the testing, but also the building of the entire packaged device in a package and attaching the various transducers to the sensor, etc., etc. And then finally, You have to think about life cycle costs. This would include support and, of course, marketing and sales. It's very hard to sell a product unless you're able to interact with potential customers that might need it. So all these things come into play. As younger engineers, we tend not to think about them directly, but as your career develops, as you advance, you'll be thinking more and more about these issues. And so we'll try to talk about a little bit of that from a technical perspective as we go through this course. In this class, we're going to talk about several threads. We just talked about a financial thread. We have to be thinking about cost as we think about all the different aspects of design. Another issue that we run into that's really quite a classical engineering issue is power. And in particular, we want to understand power in the context of the communication link. And there's a formal method to dealing with that. We call it a link budget. And it's really short for a link power budget. And the goal of a link budget is to track the power level of the signal from the transmitter through the channel, through the receiver, all the way to the detector that is in the receiver. And remember, the detector is another way of talking about the demodulator. Now, what we're keeping track of is various forms of gains and losses. Now, gains will come from things like amplifiers. We have a power amplifier in the transmitter. We have a low noise amplifier in the receiver. We also can get antenna gains if our antennas are directional. But we also have losses. And the greatest loss is due to propagation, as we talked about. Now, all these gains and losses are multiplicative. A signal's power is multiplied by something. Let me give you an example of this. So, in a communication channel, we may have a multiplicative loss of 10 to the minus 10. That means the signal power can go down simply by multiplying it by this. Because all these gains and losses are multiplicative, and they tend to be very large or very, very small in magnitude, we use decibels. So all our work, instead of being multiplication and division, becomes addition and subtraction. We have here this loss factor of 10 to the minus 10 corresponds to what we say as a 100 dB loss. So again, the idea of the link budget is to track the power level all the way through the system from the transmitter to the detector. And the overarching goal of the link budget is to determine what we refer to as the link margin. What this is the excess or the deficit of power, and again, this is usually measured in dBm or dB milliwatt, to achieve a particular performance level. And one yardstick we use for performance is the bit error rate of the communication link. So we find how much power it takes to achieve a certain bit error rate. In sensor networks, you might look for an error rate of something like 1 bit in 100, and then find out if your power level is enough to achieve that. If it's more than that, you have an excess, you have a positive link margin. And if it's less, you have a deficit, you have a negative link margin. And in either case, you may do a redesign, because there's no point in paying in terms of dollars or battery power supply for extra that you don't need. And of course, obviously, you must fix it if you actually have a negative link margin. So this is yet another way of looking at designs, and we can think of these as dimensions.